Throughout the Gospel of Mark, there are two main questions being asked and answered. Who is Jesus, and what did he come to earth to do? Join us for our new series, Identity and Destiny, as we uncover those answers and how they can impact our own identities and destinies. And now, here's today's message.
Okay, let's move to the message this morning. We are starting a new series, and it's in the Gospel of Mark. We're just going to be taking a look at some of the the stories of Jesus's work as he walked the earth. We're going to be walking through Mark to do that, and we're going to be looking specifically at how Jesus identified himself, what he saw as his identity, and then what that led him to. And then the third part of that is, how do we embrace the identity we have as Christians? If this is how Jesus lived and what Jesus saw was important, then it should be important to us. And so as we look at Jesus' self-proclaimed identities, then they should cause us to reflect on how am I living that out in my life, and should challenge us and encourage us in that way. So that's the series here in Mark. We'll be here for, eight or nine weeks, I think. But we'll start today. This is the main point for the message this morning. Jesus' self-proclaimed identity was to be a servant. Okay? So keep that in mind as we go through the message today. Jesus' self-proclaimed identity was to be a servant. Let me give you just a little bit of factual stuff. For some of you, this will be like, okay, you know, I don't really, that's not important to me. But for others, it is. And so I thought this would be a good way to start, now that I've kind of brought the expectations down low, right? You know, I thought this would be maybe a helpful way for us to start as we look at the Gospel of Mark, because you know that there are four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and a Gospel is a telling of the good news of Jesus Christ. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John each tell the story of Jesus' coming, his life here on earth, his death, his resurrection. They tell it in their own way, and we have chosen to look at that through the Gospel of Mark. Mark may be the earliest of those four books to be written, okay? There's some debate among scholars whether it was Matthew or Mark that came first, but a number of people believe that it was Mark. They have fragments of the Gospel of Mark that some archaeologists date back to 50 AD. So the significance of that is, remember that Jesus was crucified around 33 AD, give or take a year, it was 33 AD. So if there are fragments of the Gospel of Mark that can be dated to the, let's say, the early 50s AD, that means that those fragments, that book was written within 20 years of Jesus' death and resurrection. And the significance of that is that we can be assured we have a very accurate account of who Jesus was, what he did, what he said, how he lived his life on earth. So, you know, that's very early, just within 20 years. One of the reasons that they believe that Mark was written that early is because Luke probably used portions of Mark in writing his own gospel account of Jesus. And we know that Luke was a companion of Paul. We know Paul died around 67, 68 AD under Nero. And Luke doesn't mention Paul's death, even though he and Paul were very close. So Luke finished his books, his writings, before Paul's death. And Luke wrote two books. He wrote Acts, and before he wrote Acts, he wrote the Gospel of Luke. And if he relied on Mark for part of his gospel, then Mark had to come before that, right? Does that all make sense, you know, if you trace it back? So again, it just gets us to an early dating of the Gospel of Mark. One more piece on this, and then I'll move on to another angle. Papias was an early church bishop. He was the bishop of Hierapolis. He lived between 60 and 130 AD. And in one of his writings, he said this: Mark became Peter's interpreter and wrote accurately all that he remembered, not indeed in order, of the things said and done by the Lord. So what's he saying? He's saying that Mark gathered all of what he knew about Jesus from Peter. He listened to Peter. Peter recounted the stories of Jesus. He recounted the sayings of Jesus. Mark took that in, wrote them all down. He did it accurately, not always in order of the events. That's one of the things you notice about Mark as you read through, is that some things are not in the same order as another one of the Gospels. But he put it in there accurately, and we can count on it. So that's from a man who lived in the late part of the first century. So again, pretty close to the time of Christ. looking at the identity of Jesus is important because, as I said in the, you know, a minute ago, it helps us to understand what our own identity is to be about, okay? We are, if we are followers of Christ, we are Christians, which is to say we are little Christs, okay? We are to be like Jesus in the world. So as we learn about Jesus' identity and what it has meant for us, we're also learning how to live in the world. And is there anyone more important than Jesus as far as us understanding somebody and who they were and what they meant to the world? You know, even an atheist, and I have a quote from one particular atheist, H.G. Wells, who many of you know his name. He was a great author of science fiction and so forth. Not a Christian, okay, but this is what he said. "I'm an historian, I'm not a believer, but I must confess as a historian that this penniless preacher from Nazareth is irrevocably the very center of history. Jesus Christ is easily the most dominant figure in all history." That's from an atheist, okay? Which kind of makes me wonder, well, why didn't you go another step and just accept him as your Savior and your Lord? If he's the most dominant figure in all of history, you should listen to him. I don't know what kept him back. But it's just affirmation that we will never go wrong learning more about Jesus. We'll never go wrong wanting to understand Jesus better. And so that's what we want to do in this series. We're going to start, actually, you know, when you buy a book, you I would guess most of you start at the beginning when you read, right? Well, we're not going to do that today. We're going to start in the middle of the book of Mark. But there's a reason for that. I know it's an odd place to start, but I want to start in Mark chapter 10 today because Mark 10, 45, I'll give you this up front, Mark 10, 45 is considered by most people to be the statement, the quintessential explanation by Jesus himself of why he came to the earth and what he came to do and who he came to be. Okay, Mark 10, 45. And that'll be the last verse that we read this morning. I'm going to start in Mark 10, verse 32. "They were on their way up to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way, and the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. Again, he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to him. 'We're going up to Jerusalem,' he said, 'and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise.' Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. 'Teacher,' they said, 'we want you to do for us whatever we ask.' 'What do you want me to do for you?' he asked. They replied, 'Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory.' 'You don't know what you're asking,' Jesus said. 'Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?' 'We can,' they answered. Jesus said to them, 'You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. But to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared.' When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, 'You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many.'" They're on their way to Jerusalem. This is the third time that Jesus has said to his followers, said to his disciples, what's going to happen to him in Jerusalem. It's the third time he's explained to them that he's going up there, he's going to be arrested, he's going to be tried, he's going to be killed, but he will rise again. This is a message unlike anything that they had heard before from anybody, right? This was unique. And you would think that as a follower of Christ, someone who had been with him for 3 years and had spent all of those hours with him and watched everything that he did, and now he's saying something as unusual as this, you would think that, wouldn't you think that they would be totally focused on his words? Like they would be just, what does this mean? And how is that going to happen? And he's going to die and he's going to rise again? I mean, this is stuff, this is incredible news. This is incredible information that they would think they'd be trying to process, right? Is that what they're thinking about, though? No. What are they thinking about? Let's see, Jesus is going to become this great guy. He's going to become a ruler. And you know what? When he becomes a ruler, I want to be in first and second place in his cabinet, okay? You and me, James, you and me, John, let's get the first and second place in the cabinet, okay? That's what they're thinking about. And we look at that and we think, incredible, amazing that they could be so oblivious to what Jesus is saying he's going to go through to get to that place. And all they care about is, are they going to get some honor too? What are we going to get out of this, okay? You know, it's almost like in an election, and I'm not Democrat or Republican here now. It's in an election. People thinking, you know, I don't really care about this guy who's going to become president. Let's just get him elected, and then make sure that we get the first and second place in the cabinet. Okay, I mean, we don't really care about what happens to him and what he's going to have to go through to get elected, and all the abuse he might take, and all of that kind of stuff. That's irrelevant. All that really matters to us is that we get some honor out of this too. That's what James and John are thinking about. How do we know that? Because that's exactly what the Bible tells us is happening as they're making their way to Jerusalem. And it's not the first time. If you go back to Mark chapter 9, you see just a short while ago, the disciples were having an argument among themselves. What was the argument? Who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom? When Jesus becomes king, who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom? And Jesus challenges them at that point. It just keeps coming back. Why? Because the natural pull of every human being, okay, is self-promotion. We are all about promoting ourselves to one extent or another. And it's just true. We just have to accept this, right? That there is a part of us that likes to promote ourselves, okay? And let me hear this, okay? That's not all bad. Okay, it's not all bad to want to make something of ourselves. It's not necessarily wrong to want to do well. It's not wrong necessarily to want to be successful or even to want to have a place of honor or responsibility. Okay, it's the Bible doesn't condemn people for wanting to be great. The Bible condemns us for how we become great. That's the difference, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But I want you to hear that because I don't want you to think, well, then, you know, we should never aspire to anything. That's not what the Bible teaches. Paul said that he made it his aspiration, his goal, to go to places where nobody else had talked about Jesus so that he could be the first one to tell them about Jesus. He didn't want to build on somebody else's work. He wanted to go where nobody else had been. That was his aspiration. That's a great thing to want to do, right? Go someplace where nobody else is at work telling people about Jesus, and you go in and tell them, right? He also says in Timothy, he says, do your best to present yourself as one approved, a workman who does not need to be ashamed. Okay, so do your best. We should all be doing our best. God has gifted every one of us to do something. He has gifted every one of us in one way or another, and he wants us to take the gifts he's given us and to do our very best with them. And if that brings you to a place of honor in the eyes of people, that's fine. That's wonderful. It's not that places of honor are things we should try to avoid. It's how do we get there? How do we achieve the honor? How do we achieve the greatness? The difference is between ambition and selfish ambition. Ambition and selfish ambition. If you're not ambitious, okay, if you have no ambition whatsoever, then chances of you succeeding in life are not very good, right? I mean, I go back to my high school. I was not ambitious in high school, okay? I was smart enough, and I loved to read, which is, you know, a pretty handy thing when you're in school, right? You can do pretty well if you love to read. My problem was I wasn't ambitious. So instead of being in the top 10 of my class, I'm not trying to brag or anything, I believe I could have reached the top 10 in my class. I didn't. I was nowhere near the top 10 because I didn't care. You know, I was one of those students who would finish the homework in class, you know, minutes before it was due, right? And the way I bragged, I don't take books home, right? Now, today I think that's kind of silly, but, you know, at the time it was like, yeah, you know, I don't even take books home, right? That's nothing to brag about, by the way, okay? You know, I just wasn't ambitious. I didn't care. I was smart enough to be able to do the minimum, get good enough grades that nobody was on my case, and it was fine, right? I was not ambitious, and therefore, I did not succeed like I could have in high school. It wasn't until later, actually, when I got my last degree, my master's in divinity, I worked really hard. you know. My kids were in school at the time, and we would sit at the kitchen table, and they'd do their homework, and I'd do mine, and I'd get up early, you know, a couple hours before I had to go to work, and I'd be reading and studying and writing papers and doing all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to do well. Why? Because I had this calling from God. I felt it was a very real calling to become a pastor, and this was a step in that process, and it meant something to me. So I was very ambitious about that, and I worked very hard about it. So ambition itself is not a bad thing. Selfish ambition is a problem. And Paul says in Philippians that we shouldn't do anything out of selfish ambition. Okay? We shouldn't do anything out of just, I want to succeed just for my sake alone. Okay? I want the glory, I want the honor, and I don't care about the people around me. Okay? That's selfish ambition. And Paul says we shouldn't do anything out of selfish ambition. Now, here's the second point I want to make. Self-promotion can lead us to ask for things when we don't really know what we're asking for, okay? So James and John come to Jesus, and they say this incredible statement, Jesus, we want you to do whatever we ask you to do, okay? Hey, parents, how well does that go over when your kids do that, okay? Mom, just say yes, okay? I'm just going to ask you, just say yes, okay? And of course, you say, fine, yes, whatever you want, okay? No, you would never do that, right? It's kind of brazen to even expect that of somebody. Well, James and John are very brazen. They come to Jesus and say, listen, Jesus, we're going to ask you for something, and we just want you to say yes, okay? Whatever it is, just say yes. And Jesus just says, well, what do you want me to do for you? And they say, we want to sit at your right and left when you come into your glory. In other words, when you come into your power, when you're the king of everything, then we want to be in those first two places. We want to have number one and number two position in the kingdom. And Jesus says to them, you don't know what you're asking. You don't know what you're asking. You see, self-promotion, sometimes we get ahead of ourselves. And that kind of self-promotion can lead us to ask for things when we don't really know what we're asking. Jesus says, can you drink the cup that I'm going to have to drink to achieve that place of glory? Can you get baptized with the baptism I'm going to have to go through to reach that place? And their immediate response is, we can, but they don't know what Jesus is saying yet. When he talks about drinking the cup or being baptized in that way, what he's talking about is going through suffering and death to achieve it. Okay? He's talking about suffering and death. So he's saying to them, do you understand that to have those places of honor in my kingdom, you will need to suffer, you may need to die. This is what it's going to cost you. And sometimes we just don't realize what the cost is going to be. 17 years old, I wanted a car, okay? I mean, what 17-year-old guy, maybe woman too, doesn't want a car of their own, right? I wanted a car. My parents had a Kingswood Estate station wagon. It was not the coolest car to drive to school. I wanted my own car. So I saved some money, and I went and I bought a 68 Nova. I love that car. I wish I still had it. One of my regrets is I gave it away and anyway. But so I had the 68 Nova, wonderful car, loved it, okay? What I didn't realize, I mean, I kind of knew, but then it became reality. With a car comes what? Paying for the gas, registration, insurance, the brakes when they fail, right? All the repairs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, when I got the car, all of that was on me too, okay? Well, I just wanted the car. You know, I just wanted to drive around in something cool. I didn't really want all the rest of that. And sometimes when we're promoting ourselves, we aren't aware of what we're asking for. So we want a position, we want an honor, we want something, and we don't realize what's going to come with it. And Jesus is saying to them, you need to think about what you're asking for. The next thing I want to point out is self-promotion can lead us to ask for things before we're ready to receive them. So Jesus says, you know, can you drink that cup and be baptized the way I'm going to be? And they say, we can. And Jesus says back to them, well, you will, okay? You will drink the cup and you will be baptized the way I'm going to be baptized. And what he's saying to them is this is going to come. Still, they don't understand what it means, but Jesus is saying this is going to come and it will, okay? Even though they're not ready for it at this moment, in a short while, they are going to go through suffering. James, one of the guys asking here for that position, is going to be the first of the apostles to die. Not the first Christian to die, that was Stephen, but he's going to be the first of the apostles to die. In just a few years, Herod is going to arrest him, throw him in jail, and because it pleases the Jews, he's going to have him killed. Okay? He's going to put him to death. His brother John on the other hand, is going to live a long time. He's going to live maybe into his 90s, okay, and write the book of Revelation and 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. He's going to live a long time. His suffering is not going to be a short life. His suffering is going to be a long life, watching all of the other apostles martyred, okay, serving God and trying to establish churches and communicate the gospel, serving time in exile on Patmos. This is going to be John's suffering, okay? They don't understand yet what they're going to have to go through, and they're not ready at this point, though they will become ready after the resurrection. Jesus goes on to say then, in a very humble statement, he says, "These places are not for me to grant. To sit at my right and left is not for me to grant." In the Gospel of Matthew, where we have the same account, he says it's up to the Father to grant those positions, to grant those places of honor. And this is a remarkable statement because Jesus is going to have all authority and this kingdom, and yet he says, I don't have the right to say who's going to sit on my right and my left. That's the Father's alone. And that's an act of submissive humility, which is a part of becoming a great person, is to be a person who is able to be submissive and humble. As opposed to Jesus' attitude, take a look at the other disciples. In verse 41, it says, when the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Okay? Their attitude is an indignation is what we feel when we've been slighted. Okay? So the idea here is that they hear that James and John are asking for positions 1 and 2 in the kingdom, and they're mad at James and John for asking for those positions, probably because they wanted them themselves. It's like, who are you to ask for positions 1 and 2? You got to Jesus ahead of us. You know, we're mad at you. Okay? Self-promotion has a tendency to divide us into us and them. Selfish ambition has a tendency to make it about me versus you. If the way I get ahead is to step on you, okay, that selfish ambition, and that divides us. Jesus was just the opposite of that. Jesus was all about unity, right? Unity with the Father, unity with the Spirit, submissive humility for the sake of unity. But the disciples are still thinking about their own personal gain and not what is good for all of them or for the world. Well, Jesus uses this teachable moment, okay? And I picture it this way. Having heard this, you know, now you got 12 disciples and they're kind of bickering with each other. Jesus says, stop, sit down, okay, right here in the middle of the road, and let's have a talk, all right? And he says to them, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. See, Jesus is going to turn upside down the idea of how you become great in the world. He says, this is how the natural world works. People attain to positions, and they step on people to get there, and they lord it over them. So they achieve position like senior pastor, and they look over here and they say, Greg, go get me some coffee. And Greg says, it's not. I'm waiting. And Greg says, wait a minute, it's not my job description to go fetch you coffee. Yeah, listen, I'm the boss, right? Go get me the coffee. You do what I tell you. Okay? Now, I hope Greg will tell you later, I don't treat him that way. Please. But that's how the world often works, right? We get to positions of greatness, of responsibility, of honor, of prestige, and we abuse people in the process of that. We lord it over them, okay? Because what's important to us is the satisfaction we get with holding those positions. Jesus says, listen, it's not to be like that among you. That's not the way to greatness. That might work in the world, okay, for a while, okay? That might work in the world. It does not work with God. With God, it's a completely different way. You want to be great? He says, that's fine. No problem. You want to be a great person? Be a great person. Here's how you become a great person. Consider yourself a servant to everybody else. More than that, consider yourself a slave to everybody else, okay? Which is the lowest, you know, position in society that you could hold, is to be a slave. Just consider that your responsibility in this world is to do good for other people, to serve them. Okay? Not to do whatever they ask. That's a whole different thing. We could have that discussion. It's not just to do whatever people ask, but it's to serve them for their good. To have the attitude, this is an attitude, to have the attitude, how can I serve you for your good? That's got to be our attitude in the world. And every time we approach life that way, every time we act out of that attitude, God says, that's a great person there. That's a great person. That's an act of greatness. That's what God considers to be great. Jesus wraps this up. He says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. That phrase, Son of Man, is really important to understanding this whole passage. He starts the passage out with that. Okay, he says the Son of Man is going to be delivered over to the chief priests, and he closes the passage with that. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, to give his life as a ransom for many. What does the Son of Man refer to? Well, it goes back to Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, where Daniel has a vision of one like a Son of Man, and he comes, and he goes to the one seated on the throne, and he's given all authority and all power over all places and all kingdoms for all time. And that's a prophecy of Jesus. That's a prophecy of Jesus receiving the world as his kingdom. And Daniel has that vision, and Jesus applies that vision to himself. And he's basically saying to them, I am that one. I am the one that Daniel prophesied. I am the Son of Man. I will have all authority and all dominion over all kingdoms and over the whole world. And yet, I am here today, he says, to serve you, to give my life as a ransom for you. What do you give a ransom for? You give a ransom when somebody is in captivity and you give something so that they can be released and freed, right? Jesus is saying, you're all in captivity to sin. I'm giving my life. That's the payment. It's a ransom being paid so that you can be set free. That's why I've come. I have come, Jesus says, to serve you. Think about that. Jesus is not looking at you and saying, you need to serve me. He wants us to, out of love, out of grace, out of gratitude. But before that, he says, I've come to serve you. I'm going to give my life for you. That's why I'm here. Once we receive that and embrace what he's done for us, our service to him should just flow naturally out of gratitude, out of grateful hearts. The takeaway today then is real simple. Seek ways to serve as an expression of love and make it your aim to serve more than to be served.
Thank you for joining us on the Northgate Podcast. We hope this message has been a blessing to you as you walk and grow in your relationship with Jesus Christ. For other great resources, explore our website at northgatefmc.com and come back next week for another great message. Have a wonderful week.